Shrink Wrap Radio number 39, June 18th, 2006. Business Consulting with NLP and Love. Welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio, the planet's premier psychology podcast. This is your host, Dr. Dave, coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area. Shrink Wrap Radio is the show that speaks from the psychologist in me to the psychologist in you, whether you be amateur, student, or professional.
We set up a one-day training, internal training for people, based upon a structured thinking communication technique. And at the beginning of each of these sessions, I would say to the group in front of me, I'd say, "This, you're going to have an amazing day because it's going to change your life." And over about a year, we must have run about three or four of these programs. And Gary nudged me and he said, "Actually, Stephen, if you really want to find out about life-changing stuff, find out about NLP."
The voice you just heard is that of Stephen Cotterill, who recently became a Shrink Wrap Radio listener. As a result of a little correspondence between us, I quickly realized he would likely make a great guest. Stephen and his partner, Karen Chung, head up a consulting company called Executive Matters Limited, working out of Brighton in East Sussex, England. Stephen's work as a consultant focuses on leadership development, teamwork, building community, and personal coaching. He's also a frequent speaker and presenter at a variety of conferences. He began working as a consultant about 10 years ago, after leaving a successful 20-year career in banking to follow his own star. Although he doesn't have a formal background in psychology, he spent 2 years training to become a master NLP practitioner. NLP, or neuro-linguistic programming, is very much based on psychological principles, which makes it fair game for this series. Here's my interview with Stephen. My guest today is business consultant, personal coach, leadership trainer, and motivational speaker, Stephen Cotterill. Stephen, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you very much, Dave. It's a real pleasure to be with you.
Yeah, you and I have only recently met via the internet and Skype. I think you told me that you were doing a podcast search on the word mind, and that's how you came across Shrink Wrap Radio.
Yes, that's right. And as a consequence, I've listen to every single one of your podcasts.
Oh my goodness, you must have had to do a crash listening.
Yeah, maybe, but you know, the benefits of technology, I can carry you with me when I travel, so that's very, very helpful background to my
life. Well, that's great. Thanks for the gift of doing that. Now, you know, as a listener, subscriber to Shrink Wrap Radio, I saw a reference to NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, when you added yourself to our Frapper map, or maybe it was when we linked in to one another on MySpace. So when I saw that reference to your work in business and to NLP, I suspected you'd make good guest material for the show.
So, well, thank you for saying that. Time will tell. Let's see what happens.
Okay, yeah. Sometimes this happens to listeners. It's happened before. Somebody is innocently a listener to the show, and then I discover, hey, this person could be a good guest, and it's... So far, it's always been a good decision. So, Stephen, to kick things off, I'd like to recap some of the info I found out about your background in a Skype conversation that you and I had yesterday morning. If I recall correctly, I believe you said you come from humble beginnings, which is to say your family didn't have money. Somehow, though, you did end up attending university and taking a degree in economics. And then you went on to spend 20 years working for the banking industry, not so much in finance, but in managing business issues. And then there came a point at which you wanted to do more meaningful work, and so you struck out on your own as a consultant. And among other ventures, and it looks like you have many ventures going, but among others, you've teamed up with a partner, Karen Chung, to form a consulting company called Executive Matters, which specializes in leadership training. How am I doing so far?
Pretty good. I would say that, just to add to what you said, we really believe that we're in an age now where soft skills are incredibly important in terms of delivering hard business results.
Okay.
And similarly, we believe that a more holistic view of ourselves as individuals and as teams and as organizations is very important. So we talk about, slightly cliched, I know, but we talk about engaging the hearts and minds of leaders.
Okay, and I want to get into that more in a moment, but let me just finish the recap here, and then we'll begin to get into the heart of it. Mm-hmm. So if I recall correctly, I also found out that you're currently 50 years old, married, and and have two kids.
Yeah.
And that although you don't have a formal background in academic psychology, you did spend a couple of years training in NLP, which stands for Neuro-Linguistic Programming. And if there are listeners who are unfamiliar with NLP, let me briefly summarize by saying it's an approach developed in the U.S. in the early 70s by Richard Bandler and John Grinder. And Bandler was a computer programmer and Grinder a professor of linguistics, and they developed their theory and practice of NLP after studying very closely the work of three of the most successful therapists of that time, who were Milton Erickson, Virginia Satir, and I think Fritz Perls, if I recall correctly.
Spot on. Very good.
Okay. And since that time, NLP has continued to grow and develop and has enjoyed a lot of interest among people who consult to business. And I went through an NLP training back in the 70s myself with Bandler and Grinder, but I have not really kept track of it since it's kind of blossomed in the whole world of business. So I'm particularly interested in our interview today to focus in on your use of NLP in the work you do. And also somewhere on your website, I saw an emphasis on love. So I'm wondering where love comes into the picture in business leadership training. But before we get into all that, I'd like to know something about your decision to change the direction of your business career, because you were cruising along for 20 years in mainstream banking, and then you changed direction. What happened in your life that led to this shift?
Ooh, there were a whole series of events, and despite the fact that some people may say that I was blessed to be a bit of a smart cookie, the universe had been sending me an awful lot of messages, and I kind of ignored them for years. So, for instance, I used to get quite stressed out, and that used to demonstrate itself in weight gain and grinding teeth and a bit of a skin problem and a condition called irritable bowel syndrome and all sorts of things like that.
Okay.
And I ignored all those messages. Mm-hmm. And then some things happened at home, which meant that my wife suffered from a form of cancer, which was caught quickly and fixed. That kind of started to shake me up a bit. And then we went on a skiing holiday. I was just standing on a mountainside, and my leg muscle just snapped, which took me away from work for 3 months.
Oh,
I got to see the world slightly differently. And then my family, we were living in Luxembourg at the time in Europe. We decided to relocate the family back to England, but I was still working for my corporate employer. And the day we drove back to England in two cars, I was driving the lead car, my wife in the second car. My daughter and I were in the first car, and we were stationary, and we were hit by a van and had a near-death experience. And slowly, I realized that actually somebody somewhere is trying to tell me something.
Wow.
From that moment, well, it wasn't from that moment on. Those moments kind of gave me different perspectives about what's really important. And I remember there's a joke that I remember reading, a cartoon with a gravestone, and on it was engraved, "My inbox was empty."
right. Sounds like one of those New Yorker cartoons.
And, you know, and that I don't think that's the kind of legacy I want to leave in the world. So there's a lot more to do.
Yeah. So was it somewhere around that point that you got involved with NLP, or what was it that, how did you sort of swing to this, both to being independent and to this emphasis on the soft side of business?
To keep a long story short, eventually I left Luxembourg myself and I followed my family back to England. And I started working for a specialist financial services consultancy in London. And one of the values of that particular organization was all about knowledge sharing. And myself and a friend of mine, Gary, we set up a one-day training, internal training for people, based upon a structured thinking communication technique. And at the beginning of each of these sessions, I would say to the group in front of me, I'd say, "This, you're going to have an amazing day because it's going to change your life." And over about a year, we must have run about 3 or 4 of these programs. And Gary nudged me and he said, "Actually, Stephen, if you really want to find out about life-changing stuff, find out about NLP." So I went to Amazon, bought a book, the book arrived. I read chapter one, didn't get it at all, put the book on my bookshelf, and nothing happened for 2 years. And then something happened which meant that I signed up for just a weekend workshop type thing. And I kind of experienced a degree of personal internal change, which helped me to understand that by adding options to my life, I could have a lot great deal more flexibility. So time goes on. Eventually, I signed up for something called a core skills course, then a practitioner course, and eventually a master practitioner course. But I think the key moment for me was when I heard about the three R's.
The three R's, okay.
Yes. So in England, when you say the three R's, it means reading, writing, and arithmetic.
Yeah, here in the States also.
But in this context, I heard that the three R's is something that everybody on this planet needs, and that is respect, recognition, and reassurance.
Oh, yes.
And it just had such a, you know, an aha moment, an epiphany. Internally, I had a very, very strong kinesthetic response. You know, I had this like amazing electric feeling go all the way through me. And I just realized that, you know, my life is more than just working for somebody else. So one thing led to another, and I helped myself by engineering to leave where I was working on Independence Day 2003. And the irony is, although I left on the 4th of July, I didn't realize until about 4 weeks later I'd actually left on Independence Day, because, you know, it's not that's an American holiday rather than an English holiday. And I just realized it was the best thing I've ever did in my life. And since that time, I would say that I've learned so much more in the past 3 years than I've learned probably in the whole of my adult life.
Uh-huh. What are some of the high points of that learning?
I would say that the highest point of learning is that every single person on this planet, about 6.5 billion people, are unique individuals. And yet, at the same time, we're all one, we're all connected. And so I'm just finding people to be the most fascinating subjects mm-hmm. ever. Mm-hmm. And we may get into it later, but I actually also believe that we're in a time of human development where we see all sorts of special things. Like, for instance, in many societies, you see 3 generations of adults alive at the same time, which is a kind of a unique event when you look further back. You see an aging population. So if you like, the wisdom of the world seems to be developing. You see technology such as the technology we're using now, connecting people and breaking down geographical boundaries the way you haven't seen it before. And even in so-called lesser development countries, such as Africa and China and India, technology is helping to connect all sorts of communities. And I think that's the key word, community. And it just seems to me that that's going to underpin a very exciting new century.
Yes. So we're living in a very special time. It seems to me, I recall, you can confirm or deny this, I think I seem to recall reading somewhere that there are more people alive on the planet today than all the people who came before cumulatively. Mm. Does that ring a bell?
I've read a very similar thing, yes. Mm-hmm. Quite an amazing concept.
Yes, it really is. Now, what sort of work are you doing with your clients today?
When I say we, it's myself and my friend and colleague, Karen Chung, and also a network of similarly minded individuals who tend to be in the UK, but we do have a broader network than that. And basically what we're doing is we don't give advice, we just create experiences for people so that they realize for themselves that their options going forward are considerably greater than they've learned to date. You probably recognize, you know, the once bitten, twice shy rule of human learning. Mm-hmm. And we come across so many people who have learnt that if they stay in the logical part or the rational part of their brain, some people call it left brain thinking, then that's the way to get on in the world. And you see a lot of people who, you know, spend a lot of time studying or focusing on becoming a specialist or whatever, and they realize that that's not enough because maybe their communication skills are not so good or their appreciation of other people is not so good. And an extremist with some senior people. You know, I, in particular, have come across people who are disrespectful of individuals and are probably more respectful of other things on the balance sheet within the organization. And if I can just kind of paraphrase Stephen Covey, the Seven Habits guy, he speaks of how historically we've put things on the balance sheet and people in the expense column of a business. Mm-hmm. And we're in this new age, which we've kind of alluded to already, means that actually we're putting people back on the balance sheet. And to quote Covey more directly, he speaks of being effective with people and efficient with things. And those two business skills are very, very different. And it's kind of helping people see that balance, that it's okay to be very, very tough on issues and things, and it's okay to be soft on people.
Okay. Yeah, business schools probably tend to focus very much on training the left brain and teaching people that they need to be very tough-minded and aggressive and so on. How open are your clients to these softer human skills concepts when they come to you?
Well, a classical analysis of business benefits, whenever you know one needs to invest in something, that investment is to reduce cost, increase income stroke profitability, mm-hmm. Reduce pain, or increase happiness, and to which I would add a fifth, which I like to call increasing self-actualization, or maybe self-development, or a sense of self.
Yes.
And what we tend to find is that it's almost like 5 years ago, it would have been impossible to have these kind of conversations. And today, a lot of people we speak with just get it. They know exactly what you're talking about. I'll give you an example. Last week, Karen and I were in London, standing on street corners in the city of London, distributing flyers for a group community we've created called Meeting for Success. And what was very, very interesting is that people at first were, you know, slightly skeptical and basically, you know, been there, done that, seen pieces of paper. We weren't thrusting anything into anybody's hands. We're just inviting people to have a look. And the moment we said, basically, this is for people who are fed up at work, we had 100% response rate. Mm-hmm. And there's this, I think there's this general feeling of being very fed up. And there must be a better way of appreciating our working lives. And I just guess we're tapping into a trend. I don't think we're creating anything new. It's just there anyway. And we happen to be sensitive to it. And we're helping people, if you like, cross a bridge of consciousness from a limited, rational view to a broader, more holistic view.
Yes, I think many people are unhappy in their work. Lots of people in the corporate world are unhappy in their work. They sense that they'd like to be doing something that's more meaningful, something that contributes more to other people or to the progress of the world. Do you find that, you know, some people leave the corporate world because of that? They feel like, well, they've got to strike out in a totally different direction and they become therapists or something else. Do you find that you're inspiring people to leave their jobs, or are you helping them to discover a way that they can stay in their job but find a renewed sense of meaning in it?
At a risk of oversimplification, it's both. Mm-hmm. If you consider in any given situation, as individuals, you know, people with free will, we can decide that we do nothing. In other words, we just accept whatever that situation or environment is. We could decide to do something about it, but still staying within that environment, or we could decide to move somewhere else and do something else. And what we, although we're interested in everybody, those people who've decided to accept the status quo, well, that's their choice, and it's entirely their privilege to stay with that, and it's not up to us to persuade them to see the world differently. However, we're very, very interested in people who wish to continue within their environment, but actually do something to improve it for themselves and their co-workers. And should people wish to move on to a new environment, different territory, pastures new, whatever expression is appropriate for you, then we can help them through that transition too.
Okay.
But now, to date, everything we've worked on has been in category two, which is to stay within the environment but do something about it.
Okay. Now, where does love come into all of this? Because somewhere in your writings, I came across the word love, and it sort of leapt out at me. And I'm wondering how, you know, because love seems like a concept that's very foreign to the business environment.
Well, that is incredibly interesting. I shall tell you the antecedent to love in my thinking in a business context. And yet, although it may seem foreign, I suspect that you and I, and maybe some people listening to this, could think of a lot of instances where people say things such as, I love my work, I love the challenge, I love the people I work with, I love working with these guys, I love my customers, I love my products, I love... And it is a word which is in common usage, and I guess that's because it's a word that is very basic to the human experience. What tends to happen, though, is a lot of, you might even call, industrial age-type management structures means that command and control tends to be the order of the day. And one of the problems with the command and control is that some people have discovered that if they use fear, then that's the way to literally control other people within the organization. The downside of fear, as you all know better than me, is that that's a very primal emotion and tends to lead to one of three key responses. One is fight, the second is flight, and the less well-known, less well-understood by many, is freeze. Mm-hmm. And do you really want your team to be either fighting you, running away from you, or freezing and doing nothing?
Yeah.
Whereas a love-based response or a love-based view of the world is much more enabling. And if you really wanted to look at it in very sort of hard pounds and pence, dollar and cents point of view, if you really want to get the best out of people, then accessing their higher brain functions, which is appreciate is a very, very powerful tool indeed, then love is just makes a it's just a natural way of enabling people to see a lot more options and creating a whole new world of possibilities to achieve whatever goals or aims or missions that particular organization is trying to achieve.
Okay, now maybe this relates to something else I saw on your website where you talk about something you call the AQ model. What does
yes.
AQ stand for? What is it and how does that come to play?
The AQ model is something which Karen and I created. It is a high concept idea, and what it designed to do is first of all invoke curiosity, and secondly is to help people realize that in order to achieve whatever it is they're trying to achieve, then our traditional IQ is an okay starting point, but it's not enough. And thanks to the likes of Daniel Goleman and others, people speak of EQ.
Right, emotional intelligence.
Emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. But there are other things. There are things like what I like to call WQ, which is wealth quotient. And wealth is more than just money. You know, it's that bigger contribution to the planet. For some people, there's SQ, which is a spiritual intelligence, and then people may draw power from that. Some people find that their physical intelligence or their muscle memory or whatever you want to call it, it's very important. So the whole thing about the AQ model is a bit like a mixing desk in a recording studio. Sometimes relying on traditional left brain rational IQ may be enough. other times, if you could kind of turn that volume setting right down and increase your EQ or one of the many other types of cues, so you can actually accelerate towards whatever it is you're trying to achieve, either on your own or more likely in concert with other people. And that's where the AQ idea comes from. If you want to accelerate towards where you go, then maybe we should be thinking about a more holistic AQ model.
I see. So the A is for accelerate. And
yes, or accelerating. Okay. Accelerate for me is like a fixed idea. Accelerating is more of a dynamic idea.
Okay, accelerating, and it's a holistic model.
Yes.
Now, one of the things you do is personal coaching. How do you approach
yes.
that work? What's your philosophy in coaching? The whole coaching concept is really of great interest to me because, you know, before there was being a therapist or being a counselor, and now there's emerged kind of a third way called coaching. So tell me a little bit about your own relationship to coaching.
Well, I have to declare something. Not so many years ago, the whole idea of using the word coaching was totally abhorrent to me.
Yeah.
It invoked such a negative and unhelpful response within me, and it took me probably the best part of 18 months to get to where I am today, and that is coaching is one of these words which is pretty meaningless outside of the world of sports. And even within the world of sports, there's skills coaching and there's attitude coaching and there are some other physiological coaching skills as well. And coaching is one of these words that could mean anything to anybody. And it also seems that it's kind of flavor of the month in the minds of some people too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So at first, I didn't want to use that term at all. And then something kind of clicked inside of me, and I realized, actually, if we are all on the same planet and we are all connected, and coaching is a word which makes sense to people, who am I to prejudge what that means for them? Because it's one of those words that could mean anything to anybody.
Okay.
So kind of declared that interest. What do we mean by coaching? We don't mean coaching in the we know better than you, and therefore you do what we suggest. By coaching, we understand where somebody is today. We don't need to know how they got to where they are today. It's up to them entirely if they want to share those sort of things. So there's a distinction there between a more therapeutic approach and a sort of self-actualization or self-development approach. And then we say, well, where do you want to go? And then we work out what the particular issues or blockages are that preventing whoever that person is to get to where they want to go. And I can kind of summarize it a bit. There's a guy called Timothy Galway who wrote a series of books, In a Game of Tennis, In a Game of Skiing, in a Game of Golf, and more recently, In a Game of Work.
Oh, yes, I read his tennis book. I remember that one.
Yeah, it's almost like an NLP book without calling it an NLP book.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense, he says that potential minus interference equals performance. So in other words, we may all have, say, a potential of, say, 10. If our performance is 5, then the interference represents the other 5. And therefore, if we work not on trying to people to perform better through additional effort, but we work on the blockages that are preventing people to be the people they deserve to be, then more potential is turned into actuality and their performance goes up. And it's a bit like a tug of war. I don't know if you're familiar with the tug of war.
Oh, yes.
For some people, they see themselves trapped. So you could imagine them being in the center of the piece of rope that's being pulled from both ends.
Mm-hmm.
And one end is saying, "This, you know, come over here, this is your future." And then the other end is holding them back. And there's a considerable amount of energy being expended to get nowhere. And in the tug of war analogy, you would expect one end to pull harder and then the whole game is over.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine, though, if the end that is pulling you into the future that you desire uses exactly the same amount of energy, and the energy that's holding you back, or whoever it is back, is released or maybe added to the pull energy, then people with no extra effort can achieve whatever they want to achieve faster and easier and with a lot less internal tension.
Well, in your working with people, how do you get them past that part where they're blocking themselves, where they're holding themselves back? You say you examine the issues and the conflicts, and
yes.
What do you do that helps promote that movement? Is it inspiration, or what kind of technique? Or
well, there is you mentioned NLP in the intro, and I've mentioned it a couple of times. There's an attitude within NLP, which is it's important to go to wherever the other person is and establish rapport. And that means that if I wanted to take somebody on a car journey, rather than meet them halfway on that journey, I go to their home and we make sure that we're prepared together for that journey. And then we speak about where it is we want to go on that journey, and we travel the journey together, which is very different to say, hello, I'm over here, you come and catch me up, mm-hmm. and then we can carry on. And we speak of rapport, and we speak of pacing, and we speak of leading.
Yes, and, yes, those are
it's
NLP
a perfectly
concepts.
Natural, mm-hmm. Yes, and it's a very natural thing. There's a guy in the UK called Peter Freeth, and he calls NLP advanced common sense. And that's basically what it is.
Uh-huh. You know. Can you share with, we're getting towards the end of our time here.
Yeah, sure.
I wonder if you can briefly share a success story that comes out of your work with business clients.
I can think of quite a few, and obviously I don't want to breach any confidentiality. However, one I'm thinking of in particular is somebody who is, from a left brain IQ point of view, very, very well educated person, very successful international career, but she found herself stuck in a basement flat in London, earning very little money indeed, and basically doing what she thought other people expected her to do. She came to me as a result of a personal recommendation, and in a very short time, in about 5 sessions, she achieved her initial goal, which was to increase her income level to give herself more options. We're talking about a 6-month period for this.
Okay.
She discovered her, I believe she knew this all along, but she was able to articulate what her true dreams were. And to use Joseph Campbell's words, she found her bliss.
Mm-hmm.
And now she is in a situation where not only professionally she's heading towards what she really wants to achieve, there have been other knock-on benefits. So, for instance, her interpersonal relationships have improved. And she laughs more, she has more fun, and is enjoying life. So, in other words, she's gone from being in a burdensome place into an enabled place, achieving what she wants to achieve.
Wow, that's great. That sounds really, really wonderful. As you move ahead in your work with others, now this may be a tough and personal question, I'm wondering what's on the cutting edge for you right now, so that as you move ahead in your work with others, what do you currently see as your own biggest personal challenge?
Ooh, my I'm actually, it's nice to that cutting edge. If you don't mind, I just like use the word cusp, because I really
okay.
believe I'm on the cusp of something.
Mm-hmm.
Due to my family circumstances, I went from being dependent to independent at quite a young age, when I was a young teenager. And I will be 50 in July. And my independence lasted probably, I would say, till about 2 years ago. And I'm starting to learn, in fact, I think I'm learning quickly, that actually a state of interdependence, which goes back to that community word, is such a fantastic place to be. And there have been several things on my path which have helped me. And one of those things that have been very helpful to me is, and it's only this year, probably about 4 months ago, I'm learning to ask others for help. So
yeah.
I no longer believe I can do everything on my own.
Yeah,
I know that I can achieve whatever I want to achieve in concert with others.
Yeah, that is a great a great learning, and it's one, I guess that would be on my own cusp as well. Well, to wrap things up, if you were to recommend one book to our listeners, what would it be?
My library is enormous, but the book, which I've read twice and currently reading again, and I carry in my work bag all the time, is something called A Whole New Mind by Daniel Pink. It's not specifically an NLP book. It's not specifically a business book. It's not specifically a personal development book. It takes a very holistic view of where we are as humanity on the planet today. And he speaks of a high-touch, high-concept world where we leave technology and industry behind us to become a very creative race of people on the planet. And it's absolutely fascinating, and I would wholeheartedly recommend it to anybody.
Okay, wonderful. Well, Stephen Cotterill, I want to thank you so much, both for being a Shrink Wrap Radio listener and now for being a wonderful Shrink Wrap Radio guest.
Thank you so much, Dave. It's been amazing to get to know you, and I hope we have lots of conversations in the future.
I hope you enjoyed this interview with Stephen Cotterill. I guess part of the reason I'm interested in Stephen's story is that I think many people want what Buddhists refer to as right livelihood. That is, they want to do work that is personally satisfying, that's helpful to others, that's socially progressive, and that does no harm. I suspect it was something like that that drove Stephen to his career change and that now brings at least some of his clients to him for personal coaching. When I was active as a professor, I noticed around 90% of our students majoring in psychology chose a track that would prepare them to go on to be counselors or therapists. I think in many instances this was motivated less out of a deep understanding of what the therapist's job entails and more out of a vague sense that they just want to be helpful to people and also want a career that feels meaningful. One of my colleagues would sometimes confront these somewhat naive idealists with the question, "Are you sure you want to sit in a room all day for 40 hours a week listening to people who are unhappy?" Now, that may be somewhat of a jaundiced view, but it's not that far off the mark. I think it's a question that one should ask themselves before investing tons of money and time in therapeutic training. It seems to me that there ought to be more societal roles that offer people who want to be people helpers a professional path. Recently, one that has emerged is that of personal coaching. It seems to me that this might be a great career path for people who want to help others, but who want to work with relatively normal, happy people. I don't think a person could go directly out of college or university into this sort of coaching, but I might be wrong about that. Certainly for things like executive coaching, it would make sense for that coach to have had some considerable business experience and success of their own. It would certainly boost their credibility. Dr. Martin Seligman, who is one of the best-known American psychologists, a widely respected researcher and author, and a former president of the American Psychological Association, has launched an online training for happiness coaches. In his APA presidential year, he announced a new direction for psychology, which he calls positive psychology. According to Seligman, psychology has too long dwelled on the negative aspects of human psychology, and he feels it time to right the balance. As a bit of an aside, those of us who have long toiled in humanistic and transpersonal psychology were a bit nonplussed at this announcement. Duh! That's what we have been saying for the past 30 years and more. But be that as it may, because of his prominence in the field, Dr. Seligman has been able to breathe new life into the quest to explore the positive side of human nature. A spin-off of this effort is an online course of study that he's sponsoring, which leads to certification as a happiness coach. I gather quite a few people have jumped on board and are in the process of getting certified. I think we'll be seeing a lot of happiness coaches plying their trade in the near future. So happiness coaching and other forms of coaching may prove to be an umbrella under which some of you, my listeners, might be able to develop satisfying and meaningful careers. By the way, I exchanged some emails with Dr. Seligman to try to obtain a shrink wrap radio interview with him. I'm afraid he's too big a fish and this too small a pond, but he did refer me to a couple of his former doctoral students. Eventually, I hope to get a strong spokesman for the positive psychology enterprise on shrink wrap radio. So stay tuned.
You're on the couch again with Dr. Dave. And shrink wrap radio is playing on again. Yeah. It's all in your head. It's all in your head. Shrink wrap radio. Shrink wrap radio. Shrink wrap radio. Shrink wrap radio.
It's shrink wrap radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make it dangerous. It's all in your head.
Shrink wrap radio. It's a good thing I'm not singing it. I thought I'd try that little shrink wrap radio jingle in a different place today. I'd asked to hear from listeners which intro you prefer for the beginning of the show. The piano jazz intro, or this one that I'd commissioned Jeff Smith to create. I haven't heard from many of you on this issue, and those I did hear from were mixed, with some preferring opening with this jingle and others preferring the gentler piano intro. So today I thought I'd mix it up a bit and go back to the old piano intro and use the jingle as a transition. What do you think? As part of our affiliation with the Pod Show Podcast Distribution Network, we're still doing our GoDaddy promotion. If you're thinking of buying a domain name, transferring a domain, or getting some web hosting, I have some discount codes that can save you some money. Just go to our site at shrinkwrapradio.com and look in the left-hand margin, and you'll find a link to three different promotional codes that will entitle you to some great discounts. For example, Shrink3 will get you reduced from $8.95 to $6.95. for your own domain name. Now, speaking of Pod Show, I recently moved all of Shrink Wrap Radio's episodes from the Libsyn server, where they had been hosted, to the Pod Show server, and our feed now points to Pod Show. It feels like our numbers are down since making that switch, and I hope I haven't lost any of you in the switchover. And if I did lose you, I hope you're finding your way back. I've also added another new feature on the left side of each of the pages at shrinkwrapradio.com. You'll find a link there that will allow you to take market research surveys and get paid for each survey you take. Not only will you get paid cash, but we'll get a small stipend for each survey, which will help to defray our costs on this end. So it's a win-win. And while you're looking at the left-hand side of the show's page, you'll also find a link to our Frapper page. If you haven't already done so, please put yourself on a Frapper map, which allows you to put a digital pushpin on the location where you live. And you can get there from our site at shrinkwrapradio.com or by going directly to www.frapper.com/shrinkwrapradio. And Frapper has no E in it. It's spelled F-R-A-P-P-R. Unfortunately, we still have only 107 pins on the map. This means there have been no new additions on the map since the last show. This is very disappointing. I think we have around 2,000 of you listening each week, but it would sure be nice to know where you are. So take a moment, go to the show's link at shrinkwrapradio.com, click on the Frapper link there on the left-hand side of the page. I noticed there's even a chat facility there, so if two or more of you happen to go to the Frapper page at the same time, you can have a live chat about your interests in psychology or the World Cup or whatever. I'd also like to remind you of my upcoming workshop in Tuscany, Italy. This will be a week-long personal growth workshop that I'll co-lead with Dr. Ron Alexander. It'll be in a beautiful Tuscan retreat center. For those of you who are already in Europe, it's an easy trip for you, and September's a great time of year to be there. And the dates are September 18 through 24. We've got room for a total of about 8 to 15 people, and there's still spaces available. Now, you can find a link to the retreat center on my About Dr. Dave page at shrinkwrapradio.com. And if you're interested in going, drop me an email right away, and we'll make sure you get more information. This is your chance to get an intensive experience of me, Dr. Dave, and Dr. Ron Alexander, who is my guest on show number 29. And in our workshop, you'll have the opportunity to experience mindfulness meditation, self-exploration using Gestalt therapy, group work, guided hypnotic work, and much more. So if you resonate to the psychological perspective of Shrink Wrap Radio, this is your chance to really bring it into your own personal experience.
Hi, this is Kira Van Nuys Martin, and you're on the couch with my dad, Dr. Dave.
That was my daughter, Kira. I think it would be really cool to get similar audio clips from listeners, especially my international listeners. If you go to our shows page at shrinkwrapradio.com, you'll now see something called My Chingo in the left-hand column. All you need is a microphone connected to your computer, and you can click on My Chingo and leave me a voicemail. It doesn't cost you anything. You don't need to download any software, and you just need to keep it under 2 minutes. So let's see if it works. I haven't even had a chance to try it out yet. Record something along the lines of, "Hi, this is Alejandro in Quito, Ecuador, and you're on the couch with Dr. Dave." Let's see what we get, okay? Now, on to the mailbag. We get a mail from Patrick, who writes, "Good day, Dave. I'm a regular listener to your Shrink Pods each week, and I'm currently catching up on all the previous podcasts I've missed out on. Your podcasts are part of the wave of the future of educational tools available to the public. As a student interested in psychology as a future career path, I was interested in psychoanalyzing myself, as many do, as part of one's educational advancement in psychological degree programs. That said, I was interested in seeing if you have had any resources open to the public that could be used to find psychologists that would best fit one's needs. I don't have any sort of referral services right now. I think you might be able to find something like that online, but unfortunately, that's something that I could think about for the future. It's a good suggestion. He goes on to write, "I was diagnosed with OCD at the early..." By the way, OCD, in case everyone's not familiar, stands for obsessive compulsive... What's the D? Disorder, perhaps? I was diagnosed with OCD at the early age of 13 and received therapy and medication for a few years after being diagnosed. After a few years of therapy, the psychologist and I came to the conclusion that I no longer required therapy at the time. I overcame a few of my greater obsessive-compulsive behaviors and afflictions, but still have maintained problems concerning social anxieties, body dysmorphia, various checking disorders, and routine compulsions. All in all, I was wondering if you had any suggestions to psychologists specializing in anxiety disorders in my area." And unfortunately, I don't. He says, "Of course, as all of your listeners would like to make suggestions for future podcasts, I would greatly enjoy hearing your thoughts and inputs on OCD with a special guest. Thanks for all that you do." Patrick, I will keep my eye out for a special guest who could enlighten us on the subject of OCD. The next one from Martin reads, "Dear Dr. Dave, I'm one of your listeners from Melbourne in Australia and want to let you know that I thoroughly enjoy your podcasts. I came across your content accidentally while using Google to search for information on counseling. I've since become a regular listener who is always looking forward to the next dose from Dr. Dave." Well, that's a good new phrase, the dose from Dr. Dave. "While I've never worked in professional psychology, I've long been aware that psychological and spiritual insights help me to be more effective in my job within the cultural sector and help me live life more fully. Over the past year and a half, however, I've been exploring these areas more deeply through a diploma course on holistic counseling, This has given me structured reading and hands-on activities covering a wide range of approaches from Freud, Jung, Campbell, Hillman, Assagioli, Reich, Rogers, Rozak, Wilbur, and others. Boy, what a list. I continue to be impressed by my listeners. He goes on to write, I've loved every minute of it so far. I've been amazed how closely your podcasts relate to the content I've been working with. Time and time again, you and your guests have enriched my awareness and understanding of an issue. I'm very grateful to you. I have a suggestion for you to consider. Each time I hear your byline, it's all in your mind, I wonder whether you have your tongue in your cheek as you say it. After all, your podcasts have focused on the collective unconscious, body knowing, and even the soul of place, each of which extends beyond the boundaries of my, quotes, mind, as it is so often defined. Maybe you envision mind differently, incorporating body-mind, transpersonal and environmental dimensions. I'd love to hear you reflect on this issue if the opportunity arises. Thanks again. Best wishes, Martin. Martin, when I came up with that tagline, it's all in your mind, I suspected that some clever listener would eventually nail me on it. I don't know if I'd say it's tongue-in-cheek, but I do intend it to communicate on several different levels. I certainly don't mean to be saying it's all in your brain. As you suggest, to say it's all in your body-mind would be better, but that has a funny ring to it, and body-mind still isn't big enough, is it? If we include the collective unconscious, the environment, and so on, recognizing that we're part of a larger whole. Part of what I intend is the place where I see cognitive behavioral therapy and Buddhism converging, that our attitude and our belief system determine, or at least at the very least, color our experience. So when I say it's all in your mind, it's a call to be mindful, to take responsibility for the interpretation you're putting on your experience. And I suppose I'm also alluding to what in philosophy is known as solipsism, the question of how do I know that anything exists outside of my own mind, which for me also has some resonance with the Hindu idea that this life is a dream. In a similar vein, part of me objects to calling my show Shrink Wrap Radio because I'm more interested in a psychology of expansion than one of reduction. I don't want to shrink people. I want them to expand to their fullest potential. But the term shrink or head shrinker is so widely used, and Shrink Wrap Radio struck me as so cute and clever that I just couldn't resist it. If any of you have better taglines for me, I'll consider all suggestions. The phrase, you're on the couch with Dr. Dave, came from a listener, and I latched right onto it.
Well, g'day, Dr. Dave. Frank here. Just thought I'd drop line with you about some things I have observed at work. I find it quite amazing when looking at group dynamics within communal living standards that as soon as somebody comes up with an idea, such as what's happened out at work, is that one person came up with the idea of talking about ghosts. And it was a conversation for about 4 or 5 days without any consequence. It was just general chatter about ghosts and people's experiences with ghosts and ghost stories and stuff like that. And it didn't take long. It only took about 4 or 5 days extra that people started to see ghosts. And some people reported that they heard footsteps or strange noises in the corridor. And it was always the people that were the most fearful of ghosts that were reporting these incidences. So I found it quite an amazing phenomenon to sort of witness, that when there's a group of people in a vulnerable situation, as in drug and alcohol rehab, living together, that people start to, I think, imagine what they're talking about, to make it real within their own mind. And it was quite an amazing phenomenon to witness, and how it sort of spread from one person to the next. And it was the most vulnerable person that started seeing these apparitions. So I was just wondering if there is a findings in psychology that people can create their own illusions, I suppose maybe sort of a hypnotic suggestion through stories and such, which I found quite amazing to watch. Okay, thank you very much for talk to you at a later date. Oh, and by the way, if you wish to put any of this to air, you have full permission. Okay, thanks, mate. Bye.
Thanks for that comment, Frank. It's always good to hear from you. Yes, what you describe smacks of a fairly well-known social psychological phenomenon. The ghost incident that you describe at work sounds to me like an instance of what is known as mass hysteria or group hysteria. There are well-documented instances in the literature where an apparent epidemic of medical symptoms turns out to have been the result of suggestion, heightened imagination, and emotionality in a group setting. Perhaps the best-known example of this sort of group hysteria would be the Salem witch trials in Salem, Massachusetts, in the middle 1700s. This was the basis of Arthur Miller's play, The Crucible. You can find a good account of the Salem incident at answers.com if you do a search there on mass hysteria. Okay, it's time to wrap it up here. As I've said so many times before, your listener email and feedback are the fuel this show runs on. Please send it to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com. My username on Skype is ShrinkPod. I've even got a page on MySpace, and the name there is also ShrinkPod. We have a call-in number where you can leave your voicemail. That number is 206-888-2746. But now, even more easily, you can leave us a voice message from anywhere in the world by using the MyChingo link on our show's page at shrinkwrapradio.com. Once again, please help spread the word about Shrink Wrap Radio to your friends and colleagues. If you have a podcast or a blog, we'd sure appreciate a plug there. I want to close by once again thanking this week's guest, Stephen Cotterill. I think you'll find next week's show particularly interesting. We'll be speaking to Dr. Lawrence Miller, who literally wrote the book on police psychology. We close with one of my favorite PodSafe artists, New York Central Park performer David Ippolito, singing Don't Lose Sight of the Dream. This song is available for purchase on the podcast on the PodSafe Music Network, and there'll be a link in the show notes at shrinkwrapradio.com. That's it for now. This is Dr. Dave saying it's all in your mind.
Right now, it feels like the waves are crashing and the cold winds roar. You've been tossed and think you've lost your way. You know I've been there, but there's a lighthouse flashing on that distant shore. And when the going gets rough, if you look hard enough, it's still shining to show us the way. And if you look for that light when you're lost in the darkness of night, you'll find that that's when the slightest star shines brightest. Look straight ahead, then hold on tight and you'll sail safe and warm. Through the middle of a mighty storm, you'll get through it all right if you don't lose sight of the dream. Right now I know what you're thinking. Hey, what's it all about? You're wondering how you'll make it through another day. We've all been there. It kind of feels like you're sinking and there's no way out. But when your strength's nearly gone, keep on keeping on and just know that you'll get there one day. 'Cause if you look for that light. When you're lost in the darkness of night, you know that that's when the slightest star shines brightest. Look straight ahead, then hold on tight and you'll sail safe and warm through the middle of this mighty storm. You'll get through it all right if you don't lose sight of the dream. Let your heart's desire be your guide. It's a wild, exciting ride. Straight through the middle to the other side. And if we look for that light, when we're lost in the darkness of night, you know that that's when the slightest star shines brightest. Move straight ahead, then hold on tight and we'll sail safe and warm through the middle of this mighty storm. We'll get through it all right if we don't lose sight of the dream.
When you're lost in the darkness of night,
don't lose sight of the if we don't lose sight of the dream.